Wrestling Soup is intended for a mature audience. We like to use naughty words.
What up there, Mr. Jeff Lipman of Lipman & Associates?
There's no Lipman & Associates.
Ah, there should be. Just wrestling. just a legal show about all the stuff that wrestling gets wrong. Come on.
We tried to do that a little bit on Hammerlock Takeover, but it's not that entertaining to a lot of people.
And it's difficult for me to make any kind of like conversation about it because my understanding of everything that's going on is limited by other people's armchair quarterbacking. Just to introduce everybody, Jeff Lipman is the host of Hammerlock Hangover and Garden of Doom. He also did a few episodes with me in the past, most notably the Fair Use episode, which got a lot of hits and stuff like that. And people still ask me every once in a while about that shit. So that's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah. But how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. And I appreciate this opportunity. I mean, you know, it's a fun thing to do. You guys have a gigantic platform or gigantic audience. You've been entertaining me, and you and Joey have been part of my lives indirectly for close to 8 years now. And, every now and then I hear you all talking about legal stuff and like the other day I was listening and I was hearing Joey talking about how he was, envisioning an interaction between Sasha and a union attorney. And I'm just like, oh, that's so cute. And I'm like, it'd be nice if they had access to a lawyer. And then I'm like, wait a minute, they do.
Yes. Well, that is a thing that's been brought up. God, I don't even know how many times I've heard that. Like wrestling fans in general, and even wrestlers over the years have always talked about this union, this magical union that for at least what, since the 90s, maybe even earlier than that, has never really come to fruition.
Ventura.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesse Ventura. So out of your opinion, why has wrestling not established a union, Jeff?
Well, let's take things into two buckets here, because everyone knows what a union is. Very few people know what a guild is. So wrestlers are independent contractors. So right there, they're not eligible for unions. Unions are for employees. Guilds are for independent contractors. So there's problem number one with union. The second thing with unionization is, why isn't there unions in wrestling, aside from the fact that they're not employees, and despite infrequent periodic attempts to challenge that, which have largely been unsuccessful, it really hasn't been challenged,
right?
At least not in a full throttle kind of way. But the real reason is because the wrestlers know it wouldn't be good for wrestling.
Well,
you go ahead.
You said, you know, the first thing that you said was that they couldn't form a union because they're kind of part of a guild, because a union's an employee. But isn't that pretty much the established, you know, when we've talked about it before with like SAG-AFTRA and stuff, that wrestlers could very well be considered stunt creators, stunt actors, you know, stunt men, as opposed to being just considered as actors or, you know, television personalities? Like, wouldn't they fall into that same line? Because I'm not really sure, because they're still billed as independent contractors. And I know Joe and me were talking about that the other day. It's like, even though you're an independent contractor, you still have to fulfill the job that you've been contracted for. So I think there's a lot of misinformation about the idea and the rights of what independent contractors have when it comes to something like a guild, or in this scenario, you know, a union. But they allow that with companies like SAG-AFTRA.
Sure. Let's stick with union now for just a second, or just probably more like 5 minutes knowing me. Because, I mean, people do talk about unions, and they're simply not eligible for unions. It's
right.
Like saying, why can't non-citizens vote? They're not eligible to vote. It's just that. But if you want to create a union, no one legally can stop you. So the union might assist, you know, some organizers, and then there has to be votes. There's like three tiers of voting. And in the beginning, they have to get at least one third of the employees interested in a vote. It's got to be public. It's got to be unimpeded. There can't be active campaigning within the job site, and the owner or the management can't be like sort of hiring Pinkertons to beat them up, or otherwise just them. Then there's a second vote where the employees have to get at least 50%. If they get 50%, then they're unionized. And then, you know, depending on the state union, if you're a member of a union, it can be mandatory or not. So that's the union process. It's not exactly simple in its own, but that's how it's organized. So if this independent contractor status was ever defeated for WWE alone or for wrestling writ large, that would be the process. SAG-AFTRA. Right now, any wrestler is eligible to apply for a SAG-AFTRA membership. Anyone can. The problem is that the employer, the company, I'm going to use the employer, even though I just said the non-employees, just because it's easy. The promoter, the promotion, we'll say promotion to keep the terminology straight, doesn't use SAG-AFTRA contracts. So unless they're going to use a SAG-AFTRA contract, the membership is not useful for wrestling, but it is useful in other things. There's a lot of wrestlers who are members of SAG and they use it for benefits, to get group benefits, to fund their retirement. I mean, not just big time people, like Frankie Kazarian's been a member of SAG-AFTRA since like 2003 because he's gotten bit parts in stuff. You know, a lot of the wrestlers who are indie wrestlers in California in the LA area seem to be happier than like the ones in the Southeast. Right. And that's because a lot of them do stuntman stuff and are in SAG.
But that doesn't apply to the wrestling promotions themselves. SAG-AFTRA is not going to come after WWE because Sasha Banks happens to be a part of SAG-AFTRA because of her Disney work. They're not going to go after WWE for the current situation, right?
No, they're not. And that's sort of where, you know, your former partner used to call Gabrielle Carteris an ambulance chaser. And I mean, that's not really fair at all, but it was inaccurate. First, I'm a lawyer, so I don't like the term ambulance chaser, even though I'm not a personal injury attorney. But there's nothing for her to do. It's up to people to come to her. However, there is one part that is right, that SAG-AFTRA could, and I don't know how they do it. I imagine there's bylaws, but how they would change it. And there's a movement afoot to do exactly what you said earlier, was to create a mechanism or to treat wrestlers, at least on episodic television, the same as actors in any other television or stunt people, because it is scripted. It's just athletic scripted. This is not like, you know, American Ninja Warrior, where you've got contestants for, you know, 10 weeks and then they're never on TV again. This is their career. And there's actually a group, there might be more than one, but there's actually one group I know that is working on it. It's in its infancy, but like people shouldn't laugh, but like people like Stephen P. New are involved. Mick Foley's involved. Shane Douglas is involved. Yeah. I'd like to be involved. I don't know how far along it is, but they're forming a 501c3, a charitable, a tax exempt. But right now they're focusing more on trying to find some sort of more trustworthy group collective GoFundMe type thing to pay for medical needs and burials and things like that. Right. But on their list of things to do is to try to lobby, or whatever the word would be, to have SAG-AFTRA change it so that at least the episodic TV wrestlers do that. Now, who's that? That would be WWE, it would be NXT, it would be AEW, it would be Impact. I guess New Japan's strong, but they're not in America, so they don't care.
Women of Wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, maybe Women of Wrestling. Ring of Honor used to be, but not now.
What about the smaller promotions like Hollywood and BTW Pro that have like local programming?
That's a good question. I don't know. I imagine if they're on TV and it's episodic TV, yes. The question is YouTube. I think the YouTube promotions would be out of luck.
Gotcha. Right. Because that's underneath the laws of YouTube, which isn't exactly FCC compliant. Is that the major part of the union, is that they have to be involved with the FCC in some way where they're, you know, federally mandated?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I just think that there still is this divide between terrestrial TV or affiliate with a terrestrial TV and exclusively internet TV. And I know that YouTube has YouTube TV. So I, you know, that could even be wrong. And so I'm not an expert on that, but that would open the door for MLW, NWA, New Japan Strong, and probably lots of indies probably run their stuff on YouTube. And if they weren't, they should start, if that were the case. But that is not the case yet. But that's a more realistic route, would be to convince SAG-AFTRA that TV wrestlers should be considered the same as any other regular cast members of a TV show.
So getting more back into the Sasha Banks thing, it was talked about earlier by Raj Giri, And other journalists have come forward to kind of like rally behind Rajgiri and saying that their sources have also said that Sasha Banks has been released from WWE via her lawyers. Do you think that this is something that's just a contractual basis that she wanted out of her contract? Like, and this is just how you feel about it. But considering the stink that she made, do you think that this is something that she's going to pursue legally?
Well, as far as I know, she has not been released yet. That it's ongoing negotiations. You know, I don't know if they're just waiting on finishing some redlining and the holiday is delaying it, or if it's, you know, she has her lawyers involved in WWE saying no. But this is a pretty good time that she does have something to pursue legally. This is a pretty good time to attack. You know, because when you know Napoleon is attacking Russia, it may not be the worst time for Italy to attack Napoleon. So it's, or Luxembourg. But I don't know what she's going to do. I honestly don't know. She has a very interesting relationship with WWE. She seems to have a love-hate thing. She posts "I love you." It sometimes seems sarcastic. Other times it doesn't seem sarcastic.
Right.
They've been a great platform for her. I don't know where else you go in wrestling to get that kind of platform. I mean, money-wise, I don't think AEW pays the same scale. That does, you know, except in very rare circumstances. Would she be one of those very rare circumstances? Could she be? Sure. But how would then Jade Cargill and Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa and Athena and Toni Storm and all these people who left to sort of make their way in the world, you know, feel that all of a sudden, you know, one wrestler came in who's making $3 million and the rest of them are making $120 and they have the ability to go on the indies. So, I mean, you have to think about the locker room too. I know that Tony Khan hasn't historically, but maybe he is now after the MGF blowback.
Perk, you know, just to add on to this, Perk wanted to ask, wrestlers cannot participate in SAG-AFTRA. And from what you were saying, pretty much if they're not on TV or involved in some kind of film or music or anything else like that, they can't, at least not now. Is it past and present or past or present?
No, well, it has to be now. You have to have 3 credits per year. They can absolutely apply for it. But even if you're a member of SAG-AFTRA, it won't help you necessarily in the wrestling world because no wrestling promotion, none of them are using SAG-AFTRA contracts. They're using their own independent contractor agreements. So it's sort of like you have to use the wrestling to get into commercials or TV or whatever, or you have to use TV or something to get into wrestling. But whatever that combination gets you into SAG-AFTRA for its other benefits, but it won't help you with wrestling right now.
Is there a minimum quota for membership? Do you think that they have to have so many pieces of work? I mean, I guess if it was a wrestling, you know, base, which it's not, but as far as TV and film and stuff like that, how does that work on a yearly basis? I know that they have an annual membership fee, but I don't know about actual bodies of work that they have to have done.
Yeah, I looked into this pretty heavily early on in Hammerlock Hangover, and there's an episode on it where a lot of detail was gone into. And yeah, there's annual dues just like every other union or guild. They're not particularly crazy, but they might be crazy if you spend $60,000 a year to net $27,000 a year. You may not have the $2,000 or $3,000 it is. But my understanding is that you must have 3 eligible credits per year to do it. Now, I don't know if that 3 eligible credits is overtaken in if you're in like 1 3-hour movie and you're the star, or if it's 3 credits is 3 credits, whether you're on screen for 2 minutes or 2 hours, it doesn't matter. Gotcha. I haven't gotten into those weeds so much.
Oh, no, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, obviously that's one of the bigger, it's one of the only attachments to a union that I think most people have brought up. I remember when we discussed this a while ago, you know, when Andrew Yang was talking about unions and stuff like that. And I remember even consulting SAG-AFTRA on social media to try and get a response. And there was a couple of sub-unions. I don't know even the correct phrasing for that, but a couple of branches of SAG-AFTRA that were willing to talk to wrestlers and bring them into their union. And I thought it was wild that at this time, there was a lot of people rallying for another wrestling union about a year ago, maybe even about 2 years ago, and nobody stepped forward. Nobody took them up on that, even though it was completely public. And I was kind of surprised that
Andrew Yang, Thea Trinidad, Soraya Page talking about that. That's the thing. The wrestlers don't want it because they know that there's only one wrestling promotion that could survive it and stay profitable. And there's another wrestling promotion that if the owner continues not wanting to make money, he could survive it too until his daddy takes control or says, you know, you're out of money. But even he at some point would have to, you know, stop hiring everybody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, for a while I was speculating that the WWE, that these releases, you know, these 2 years worth of releases was sort of paving the way for the expectation that the independent contractor status might be vitiated and they might be treated as employees. Because the first thing that happens is once someone's in a union, you get benefits and things like that. So if you can't reduce people's salaries and the costs of labor are going to go up, you have to pass on the cost somewhere else. So you can pass it on to the fans. You can make the shirts $32 instead of $30. You can make tickets $85 instead of $77. You know, they don't have PLEs anymore. So what do? You cut people. Right. But none of the indies could survive that. Most of them barely make any money at all, if they make money, period. And they couldn't survive the labor costs and the minimums that unions would require. I mean, you'd only have your top card guys, and then you wouldn't have a card.
Switching topics, kind of switching gears a little bit, you know, speaking of WWE, obviously everybody has been talking and buzzing since the Wall Street Journal brought it out about Vince McMahon stepping down as CEO due to NDA agreements made after contracted employees were having, you know, sexual relations with Vince and Johnny Ace. And it's kind of a mess because legally it seems like there's just a lot of problems with this. And I know a lot of people, even myself, believe that Vince is a guy that's going to come out of this unscathed. But regardless, the idea, okay, so I guess first I want to present. So the ethics aside, the idea of hiring a paralegal, in this case, actually multiple people that have not been named, but multiple accounts have been brought up. But the paralegal is the one that everybody's discussing because it was her friend or former friend that was the one that was kind of sending this gesture to the WWE board, talking about the fact that there was a $3 million off the books settlement with a former paralegal that worked with them back in 2019, where her annual salary began at $100,000 and after the affair began was immediately doubled to $200,000 a year. And they're at a point where this $3 million was, I believe, $1 million up front and then $2 million over the next 5 years. And this was all off the books from WWE money. Where are the legal holes in this? What is Vince McMahon capable of getting handed, you know, capable of getting booked at?
There's so many different little wrinkles to this. So let's try to take some things out of the equation so we don't go into crazy permutations. So let's seed for the moment, and we don't know the facts, but let's seed that none of this was physical assault, rape,
right,
anything like that. It was all consensual. It maybe, you know, Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky consent, you know, awestruck, power dynamics unfair, Me Too kind of stuff. We can put that on the table, but let's remove any actual physical criminal behavior, because that's
a whole different, right? Yeah, no, I agree.
Whole different thing. Also, the stuff with Laurinaitis, I don't know if he had sexual relationships with anyone or he's just sort of a creepy guy. I'm not saying any of that is good or not, but I don't know enough about it to say anything about it. I know the initial implication is that she was handed off to Laurinaitis like a toy. There was obviously a sexual implication to that. It turns out that maybe it was just that Vince got her out of the legal department, because I guess maybe he deals with them more often, and sent to the Laurinaitis to be her assistant and doubled her salary as, you know, part of a, you know, now she'll be happy. You know, so I'm not really sure about the Laurinaitis stuff, so to speak, but it sounds like he was probably creepy and there were probably settlements before that somebody covered. So let's start with the settlements and the NDAs for the company, because at some point we'll probably want to talk about the NDAs or the we'll just call the victim or victims. Cause I mean, obviously everyone's now curious, who are the other NDAs? Were any of them talent,
right?
You know, as opposed to employees. And for the women, it doesn't make a difference, but for us as wrestling fans and in the audience and podcasting world,
you know, that's juicy. You know, it gives weight to what.
Well, it's not even the wrestling world, which is the more, I guess that's a bit of more of the scandalous part. I mean, I've seen this in the New York Post. I mean, it's gone past just TMZ and USA Today. Like, it's all over the place. Mainstream media is reporting on it. Even ESPN had an article about it, Sports Illustrated. So this has gone past just, oh, this is more wrestling journalism at its finest. This is broadcasting into different areas. I mean, when Wall Street Journal was the one that broke it, I think that was an indication of how serious this matter could be.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and you're absolutely right. All I'm trying to say is that if it turns out that one of the NDAs was for, you know, and I'm making, I mean, this is hypothetical.
Sure.
You know, if one of them was Paige and one of them was Lana, that would be juicier to wrestling fans than it would be if it's other paralegals or, you know, the assistant manager of logistics or whatever. But in the real world, that doesn't really make a difference. It just makes it sensationalized. So anyway, so back to the initial question as to where can the wrongdoing be? All right, well, there's a few things here. One is that even if he used his own money for it and signed these series of NDAs, if this was all withheld from the company, not just for himself, but for John Laurinaitis, an employee of the company, and not, you know, solely responsible to Vince, he could have been putting the company in jeopardy without knowing them, which is a breach of a fiduciary duty, CEO or otherwise. But also, that would be liabilities or potential liabilities that wasn't made public in disclosures and annual reports and prospectuses and things like that, which is stock manipulation. So he could be, you know, by trying to protect himself and in his own mind, the company, it could also be say that, well, if this got out, the stock would have gone down, and that's stock manipulation. So you put us at jeopardy for that. So that's one thing. The other thing is the money. Everyone's saying that this $3 million came from Vince's own pockets. Well, what about all the other NDAs? Do they all come from Vince's pockets? And are we sure they came from Vince's pockets?
Right.
A lot of his pockets come from WWE money. So, you know, they're going to have forensic accountants come in and, you know, through an independent counsel from a law firm that has a, you know, a former FBI or Department of Treasury lawyer, you know, who's a partner now, and his staff is kind of a bunch of investigators who are former forensic FBI agents and former Treasury agents. It's not going to be like, you know, Magnum PI or, you know, or Jack Reacher or anything. And they're going to be looking at the books, and they're going to see if they can find that $3 million of corporate funds somehow went through a bunch of series of, you know, transactions to the XFL, to the Cayman Islands, to ICO Pro, whatever, somehow made it back to Vince and then made it back to these women or into the, you know, the McDivitt's escrow account. By the way, the interesting is Jerry McDivitt represents WWE and Vince. So there's a little conflict of interest potential there as well. Now that's only if the clients think so, so they can all waive it.
From what was discussed, the NDAs were written up by Jerry McDivitt himself. Like, that was part of his, you know, legal team that came up with those NDAs, or at least that's what I read. I don't know if that's okay.
But, you know, when you have a company that's really an autocracy, whether you represent the company or the king, sometimes gets a little bit muddled, and that's what's happening here because their interests are not necessarily the same. I don't think there's anything will happen with that, but don't be entirely shocked if McDivitt has to step aside and recuse himself and have other offices represent WWE, who has their own internal legal department, and, you know, someone else represents McMahon. Don't be surprised if nothing ever happens with that, because they both say, Jerry's done miracles for us both. We trust that he can be, you know, neutral in this.
Right.
So anyway, that's just a little side note.
On another piece, you know, getting to the paralegal herself, considering that she did sign an NDA and she hasn't been the one that was speaking out, but it's been her friend that has been doing the reaching to the board and everything else like that. I guess going all the way back to March is when some of these letters started trickling through. Does this, I guess, breach her NDA in some way, or is this like a legal foundation that she can stay, you know, completely legally free of this mess while it still involves her?
It could. And let's put a pin in. I just want to continue with the money because it's always about the money. Now I know everyone's saying, well, Vince sold WWE stock and used it. Big deal. He sells WWE stock every year.
Yeah, I was going
to get has to make that public. What he does with that money is his own business.
Isn't it considered insider trading though? I mean, that's the words that kept flying around, that all of these stocks were dumped before this information became public. And considering that WWE and the board knew exactly what was going on and had an idea even before Stephanie took her short hiatus, you know, does that put any kind of pressure on the idea that this might have been insider trading, trying to trade out at maximum value before the stockholders knew that there was going to be this kind of a scandal out and about?
The timing of that is very essential. It's unlikely because every year they sell stock and they have to announce it publicly before they sell it. So even if it was because they had insider information, the public disclosure that Vince McMahon is going to sell 1 million shares of WWE stock in 72 hours, that's telling the market that there might be something to worry about. So that's why you have to reveal it. Insider trading is when you don't tell people. The SEC is basically there and all these rules are basically there. So the marketplace is basically fair. Even things to manipulate the market like short sellers and futures and things like that.
Right.
They're all regulated and they're legalized. But now if he sold shares secretly through some sort of shell company or whatever to do that, that could be. But I don't think he's that dumb. And again, they do it every year to do it. There was a rumor and it was debunked quickly that Kevin Dunn sold his stock. And that would have been insider trading because he would have been doing it. Like he could have gotten more trouble. And by the way, the member of the board of directors who leaked this information is probably at more risk than that than anyone else. I mean, unless you can show that Vince sold the stuff, then made the disclosure after selling it, you know, like 2 days before this went public. I mean, the board's been investigating this for a couple of months. We only know about it now.
Right, right. Well, we only know about it because the Wall Street Journal came out through it. But at that time, the Wall Street Journal had also been investigating for months. So this information has been aware by at least outside parties from WWE, outside of Vince McMahon and his immediate family, I would assume first. But that's where the confusion comes in. And that's what I was curious about the insider trading. Is this kind of considered that only because, like you said, the timing is everything on this? If he would have done it a month ago, I don't think that anybody would have even raised an eyebrow about it. But the fact that it came out literally right before Wall Street Journal broke this story publicly, I don't know. I don't know if that makes him more legally liable or at least more liably or legally suspect, you know, as to the timing of this.
It will absolutely be looked at, but it is going to be all about the timing, not just the timing of this stock sale, but all prior ones. Because if he did it more or less the same time of the year, every year for the last 15 years, then it's a pattern. You know, it's a pattern of selling and cashing in, and that's not insider trading. And you can sell your stock and insider information. You just have to let the market know first.
Right.
It's just you, it just can't be secret information. I mean, if you don't erase the information.
Right. It's like screaming Uno. It's literally like screaming Uno. You know what I mean? Right. You have the last card and here it comes.
Right. It's screaming Uno, but you also have to wait a certain number of business hours. I mean, so you're screaming Uno and then like the game gets paused for, it is what it is, but it is not impossible. That's certainly something that they're looking into, but I think they're more looking into whether or not he put the company at jeopardy by hiding liabilities and whether or not the $3 million was actually not his money. I don't think that the 100 to 200,000 thing is as big as people think it is. I mean, first of all, she got a raise.
Right.
I mean,
but they even explained, I mean, see, that's the thing where it's also suspect as well. I agree with you. It's not as big of a deal only because it was mutually agreed upon at the time. And, you know, she had the hard luck story, you know, she had to take care of her family and she didn't, I guess she passed the bar exam, but she wasn't a part of a firm or there was a lot of,
she never took the bar.
Exam. She never took the bar.
She had a camper or a relative.
Right. Right. But it was all very, you know, hard life story and stuff like that, which is probably very true. I mean, shit happens to everybody, but the idea that they gave her an extra 100,000 a year, it's not because she was passing the bar and becoming this great, you know, legal defender for the company. You know, it was because of her intimate relations that she had with Vince McMahon and perhaps even Johnny Ace. So with that part aside, because that doesn't really bother anybody, does she become more liable for this information coming out? Once again, you know, she did sign the NDA and she hasn't publicly said anything, but clearly this information is coming from a source that is directly linked to her. Does she become liable in any way for the breach of this NDA?
She might. I mean, here's the thing about an NDA is that it doesn't mean anything until after you sign it. So up until the moment of signing the NDA, basically whatever she told to her friends or her loved ones, whatever,
right,
that was fair game. I mean, unless there was some other agreement in place that's like a pre-NDA, which is not impossible, but unlikely.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Huh.
Sure. It could be, you know, but there are NDAs during negotiations, but no one's talking. We don't know that exists. So I'm just going to go on what we know, that she signed an NDA. So, you know, for however long it took to resolve this, she could spout her mouth to anyone she wanted about this. It was only after the NDA that she wasn't allowed to talk about it. So her talking to her, you know, her best friend or a second cousin or whatever, you know, that there's nothing wrong with it. So I don't know, but if she said something afterwards, sure, she violated the NDA, but we already know what happens with this because thankfully our last president signed a bunch of NDAs that got public and found out how much he paid to a bunch of women,
right,
and they were still allowed to testify. And the court said, your recourse isn't that this can't be used. Your recourse is that you can go after them for their money back, or for your money back, which you're not going to do, and you're not going to do with this lady, and none of that's going to happen. Now, Steve, during Hammerlock Hangover, raised, oh, we're not in court. Yep, you're right, Steve. We're not in court. I mean, if you don't want to cooperate with your own board, you're going to end up in court. Even if it's not the board, you're going to get shareholder derivatives suits. And one thing we know with WWE is that every single year, some group of shareholders is suing class action suits because they don't think they got that. They were promised $60 million from the Indian TV contract and only got $48 million. They were promised $50 million from the Middle East contract. We only got $15.5 million.
Well,
I mean, every year it's a cottage industry for you know, the Fireman's Fund and other institutional investors to file these class action suits. So,
well, let me ask you this, because then this would be the other part to it. In a worst case scenario, in a scenario where Vince loses this legal battle, is found guilty of everything that has been, you know, surmised, what are the worst possible outcomes for Vince McMahon in this scenario?
The worst possible would be some sort of federal indictment, where he'd be in this, you know, interim status. Maybe he'd have to leave creative, which I know people wouldn't necessarily be heartbroken over, despite SmackDown's reaction last night. If he got convicted, there's probably something in the paperwork somewhere that says if you're no longer eligible, you lose your ability to vote. But who knows? Because who wrote these bylaws? I mean, I think one thing that everybody needs to keep in mind is that Vince McMahon personally owns 41% of the general stock, but he controls 89% of the voting stock. So you tell me, if there's nothing in paper, he could run that place from federal prison if he wanted to, because he can't be voted out. I mean, we'd have to see the bylaws and see if there's any sort of, I mean, I'm sure there'd be suits and litigation up the wazoo.
Right.
And he wouldn't want that because his wealth is tied in that, his family's wealth is tied in that, his legacy is tied in that. So I'm sure he would step down and maybe they'd make Stephanie the paper empress, you know, and see how that works out. That's the worst case. The worst case scenario is
how about more in the layman's terms of, you know, is there a potential of jail time? Is there a potential of, you know, financial suits owed? Is there a potential of, you know, not just loss of, you know, freedom, but loss of his company? You know, in layman's terms, like how bad can this possibly get? Is this at worst just a fine and some community service from Vince McMahon? Or is there a potential that he could, you know, be convicted of a white collar crime and go to federal prison?
Well, there's a lot in there. So I'm going to try to do best I can and do it layman.
Okay.
I think, to be honest, unless this is 5 days into this, and I'm not even really a securities attorney, but I have a couple in my firm that I'm hoping to talk to next week. But worst case scenario, yeah, people who do insider trading do time because it's a signal to the rest of the market that no one is above the law. That's, you know, Martha Stewart, that's your example. That's the worst case scenario. The most likely scenario is I don't think there's going to be insider trading. I think he used his own money. So I don't think there's going to be that. I think whatever the board finds about that, maybe there were liabilities hidden or whatever, I don't think it's enough for the SEC to say that was stock manipulation and that these, I mean, let's face it, sex scandals, and it didn't hurt Fox News Corp when it was Roger Ailes doing it. I get it wasn't Rupert Murdoch, it was Roger Ailes.
Right.
But it's similar. I mean, you know, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk is going through this right now. The company makes tons and tons of money, is positioned to double its revenue once the new TV contracts come out, if they get what's expected. So no, I don't think there's going to be anything criminal on this. I think whatever will be looked into, if the board finds nothing, I don't think the SEC is going to bother with anything unless there's a smoking gun. We can put an asterisk on that. That's a giant word. Yeah. As far as anything with the company is concerned, I think he controls too much of it. The company is doing too well. The share price is doing too well. It was $47 a share or thereabouts about 6 months ago. Even in this bear market, in this news, I think yesterday it closed around $63. So there's right. nothing for anyone really to complain about. There, fans can complain about the storyline.
Let me throw out this thing too, because I mean,
you've seen Bray Wyatt.
I mean, yeah, the releases and stuff like that aside. So going back to something that we kind of hinted on at the very beginning, but we didn't really delve into, the idea that there might be multiple, well, more than an idea, it's absolutely come out. We just don't know anything else about it. But the idea that there were multiple NDAs signed, an undisclosed amount of NDAs signed that have been kind of poked at as similar to the case with the paralegal. If this was to blow open and this was more than just one person, let's be crazy and say it was 20 people. It's a Bill Cosby situation. Vince was paying 20 different people millions of dollars underneath WWE funds in order to keep them on hush hush. How does this change anything? Does this actually become, obviously it becomes worse, but what is the potential outcry from that?
Well, it's much worse. I mean, first, because you said use WWE funds, so that's misappropriation of funds. If it's his own money, that's different. Then it's back to, did he have a...
But that would be an investigation. You even said that before, too, is you're right. If it was WWE funds and proven WWE funds, that's a problem. But even if they say it's just Vince's funds, you'd still have to investigate that to find out if that's genuinely his funds or if that's money that's been appropriated into his funds when it was still part of WWE.
Also, as a serial recidivist, he put the company at risk and didn't reveal it. Used Jerry McDivitt, the company's attorney, as his personal attorney, and had these NDAs. You know, if someone decide not to sign the NDAs and file a suit or something like that, that's a liability that the company didn't know about that they're supposed to know about. So yeah. That would be a big concern. I think even if he could control it math wise for voting on the board, I think that would be too big a deal. He'd have to go and be the sort of the Wizard of Oz and rule through Stephanie to the extent he can control her.
Now, what is the board's role in all this? Because that's another factor too that's being brought in. Obviously, the board wasn't aware until the information came to them, but are they now legally liable underneath this entire investigation?
Well, the board wouldn't be. The board's responsibility is to approve major items of the corporation, expenditures, plans, et cetera. But most of the members of the board are there to protect the shareholders and to protect whatever their particular investments are. So this is a pretty close-knit board. I mean, a lot of them are McMahons or McMahons adjacent. Others are large institutional investors who are sophisticated. I don't think the board would have any direct liability. The most interesting thing is that this leak apparently came from someone on the board. So if that's a board member, well, there's at least one member of the board who isn't too happy with Vince. And I guess it depends who it is and if they have allies and how big their stake is and how big their bank account is and how far they're willing to go. I mean, you know, you can watch the show Succession to see how this works. I mean, it's bizarrely parallel to this in dramatic fashion. I mean, I know that's supposed to be the Murdoch family, but you can make of the McMahon family pretty darn easily.
And what do you think ultimately is going to come from all of this? If the facts downward stand as is, and there's no surprise information, what do you think is going to happen to Vince? What's going to happen to WWE?
I honestly, what I think what will happen is that they will come out, they will investigate. They have found that they do not condone the activities of the chairman of the board, but he acted in an individual capacity. He absorbed the liabilities himself and he protected the company with his own personal funds. You know, he's assured us that this will not happen again, and they would do whatever the corporate equivalent of a censure is. But there will be nothing else, or maybe there would be some formal succession plan laid out where, you know, he's going to transition out within the next 5 years, handing it over to Stephanie as a, you know, for a 1 year term.
Do you want him to go out of curiously, you know, on a personal basis? Do you think that, see, cause I'm in the camp that I think, you know, even with all this said and done, if Vince walks on water, it is what it is, but I'm kind of hoping he's 76 years old, right? Going on 77. Don't you think it's just time to retire? Like, do you think Vince needs to fight this battle and continue trying to uphold his position within WWE? Or do you think that maybe he takes the hint? Maybe he gets a nice lake house and hangs out with the grandkids, you know?
I agree with you. I don't think he should, but we're talking about Vince. I do think he needs to. I think without doing this every day, he dies. This is everything. This is his soul. This is his marrow. This is everything. So,
but
yeah,
it's not. You know what? I hear people say that WWE is his everything, and I disagree. And I think that a lot of people overlook the fact that Vince has been trying to get out of wrestling for at least 20, 30 years.
Legitimize wrestling for over 20 years.
No,
by having other legitimate businesses.
Well, he wanted the XFL to be successful. He wanted the XFL to beat the NFL so he could be a part of the XFL and then pretty much put all of his beholdings behind that. He also did WWE films. He wanted to create his own, you know, his own company based on, you know, his own direction and everything else like that. So he's made these attempts to go above and beyond and outside of WWE. Now, he wanted to use WWE talent. Obviously, he did with the XFL. And even with WWE films, he totally used WWE talent. But it always seems like Vince is on the cusp of trying to do something new to get away from WWE. And unfortunately, all those other venues seem to fail. So I don't know.
I feel that he wanted to build off of so that it wasn't just WWE. So Disney wasn't just Mickey Mouse anymore, but he was never going to abandon Mickey Mouse. Anyway, doesn't matter. I'm pretty sure at this point he's given up on those things.
And
this is his deal. That's just what I think. But I think from a legal standpoint, as long as the PR aspect of it is short term and the stock continues to perform pretty well and they announce a few new contracts.
Yeah.
I think in 7 or 8 months, we get some innocuous, very unsatisfactory report from the board. And then they do a pro forma vote of confidence, you know, or an announcement about a vote of confidence.
Let me ask you this. So considering the kind of company WWE is and considering the past Vince has had with adultery and everything else like that, not that it's a huge deal on that level, but do you think they were prepared for this? And just in a speculative kind of way, do you think they were prepared for Vince to be lecherous again?
I think that, yes, I do, because I mean, if the fans are hearing rumors and there's stuff going on in the workplace, people know it. Trust me, as a former principal of a business who had an affair with somebody in the office, everybody knew it. And if they didn't know it, they thought they knew it.
Right.
So everybody knows. And if it happens on a serial basis, which mine wasn't, but Vince's has been, and maybe Laurinaitis's has been, then everybody knows. You know, if two people know something, it's a secret. If three people know, everybody knows. And we know that there's more than three because he's been with more than one. So, yeah, every, everybody knows, and it's, yes, it's technically adultery, but Linda doesn't care. They don't live together.
Right.
They have a partnership marriage. They don't have a romantic marriage.
Yeah, they just share the name at this point. Actually, when did that happen? Somebody said it was 20 years ago. I think even Joey said it was about 20 years ago.
Has it been that long? I think when Linda was in on that storyline with her in the coma, she was fully at the I don't care point.
That was awful. That story was awful. Was it 2001, Richard? Jesus Christ. So, other news. Jeff Hardy got busted on his third DUI in 5 years, fourth intoxication bust arrest in 5 years. Obviously blowing a .294 and then repeatedly at a .291 in the same county. Sonny was arrested. Previously, he blew .25s in North Carolina. He was driving supposedly underneath a revoked license as well. What is the potential fallout for Jeff Hardy?
Well, he's charged with a lot of crimes. So the whatever the maximum penalties are of those crimes, the worst case is the maximum and consecutively, not concurrently. That's not the most likely. He's got a terrible history. This was a high test. It looked like, I mean, everything's caught on camera. He couldn't walk. He couldn't communicate. I don't think there's going to be any probable cause issues because of all the 911 calls and all that other stuff. The fact that the cops came with guns blazing is completely irrelevant.
Right.
In this case, I've heard that it's because Jeff was completely non-responsive and he didn't quite put the car in park and whatever it is, it doesn't matter. That's only interesting for, you know, people to watch. I mean, it's, you know, the thing is that things with celebrities are weird. So celebrities always have an advantage in courts, including criminal courts, but this brain scan thing, if he had a brain injury that's so bad that he didn't have mental capacity, that could play into it somehow. That could be a reason why he failed the field sobriety test, but not the blood alcohol count.
Right.
They could use that. That would probably be a thing because he said I'm getting a brain scan, and you know, the lawyer could argue right then they should have taken him to a hospital and not treated him like he was drunk, but treated him like he was having a stroke or something, which is, it won't work, but it's interesting.
Right.
What's the most realistic thing? He's going to get a conviction. He'll probably get a sentence of something like 10 years, of which 9 years is suspended. The remainder of 1 year, he'll do 60 days either in the Huskow or on weekends, and then the rest will be on supervised probation, work release with mandatory AA meetings and, you know, either inpatient or outpatient counseling. You know, I'm sure there'll be 2,000 hours of community service, but mostly he's got to go to AA meetings. He's going to have clean tests with parole and probation. Something like that. How that impacts other cases, if he's under parole or probation in other places, you know, they may violate him, and there may be a series of other cascading events. Like Tammy, he's probably going to have a series of cascading events on other paroles and probations that she has. I'm guessing that's going to be something like it. I know a lot of people make a big deal about the bail and the bail amount. I understand why people have that visceral response to it, but bail is not punitive. It's not about punishment. I mean, the type of the crime surely plays into it, but bail is to guarantee your appearance. Say what you want about Jeff Hardy and his history with law enforcement. It's not good, but he shows up in court. He shows up all the time. So he's not a flight risk. You know, I mean, he's got the money and the resources. Maybe, who knows? He could have blown it for all we know.
Right.
But he's not a flight risk. He's proven himself time and time again to appear. So the bail really, I wouldn't call it outrageous. It wasn't like Sonny where, yeah, she's shown up, but this is the first time she's killed someone. So, you know, and she has, you know, a limited career span. So there's a pretty good chance she would take off. You know, luckily Jeff didn't kill somebody. He didn't hurt anyone.
Right.
Not even himself in this case. So, you know, the same action and different results are treated different ways, but it's the same with everyone. You shoot a gun and you hit someone, it's treated differently than you shoot a gun and you hit a tree.
Right. Right. That makes sense. It's just interesting to see, you know, the legal parameters that Jeff is going to be, you know.
Yeah, I know it's frustrating to anyone who's listening, who has ever talked to a lawyer. Everything is, it depends. All I can say is that as time goes on, some of the penumbra of the permutations under it depends follow.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only other thing that I would have to wonder about is the Tammy situation, although I don't know if that's really a legal one, more is along the lines of just, you know, her operating underneath OnlyFans in bad faith. But yeah, that was the other thing. Obviously, while she's in jail, her account was suspended and removed for TOS violation. And her boyfriend, assumingly, her boyfriend is the one that's running her account and now reopened up her OnlyFans page in order to try and curb some of the expenses that she's facing legally. Whereas before she was making close to about 10 grand a month. Now she's making severely much, much less, but she's still putting up posting new content. Is there any kind of legal recourse for this? Is there any liability for this? Or is this all just, you know, she's fucking over OnlyFans and whatever she can get.
Well, civilly, there could be a violation of terms of services, so they could deplatform her. I don't know if there's any ability for them to sanction her financially. I doubt it. They probably deplatform her. If one of the terms of her pretrial release or one of the terms, well, she's not even released. If one of the terms of her, you know, awaiting trial, like if you have conditions placed on you while you're pending trial.
Yeah.
Now, there's usually more conditions when you're not locked up, because that's what you do to not get locked up. She's locked up. So I don't know. So, but if one of those is that she couldn't make money on that, then it could be a violation of that. But that's not the case. I mean, there's even,
has there been cases like that before where if you've been,
you're high.
Okay.
Yeah. Just think about it. Killers, serial killers write books.
Right.
Their life stories can be sold for movie rights. This is no different. So it's, I mean, sometimes you've had it where, you know, there's been civil cases. And so the victims are able to attach those benefits or things like that. But
right.
Yeah, no, you can make money when you're in prison. So this would be 98%. It would be entirely a civil terms of service violation, which likely just means to a further deep platforming.
So Sunny's life story is an OnlyFans page. That sounds about right.
I mean, private business is private business. Just like if she, you know, was the co-owner of a used car dealership, that could still go into her commissary account.
Hey, Jeff, thank you very much for joining me, man. This was pretty good.
You got it.
Make sure you guys check out Jeff Lipman on Hammerlock Hangover and Garden of Doom, obviously attached to the Wrestling Soup Network. You can find that going to our Spreaker page, among other places. Also online at Evil Dose.
At Icarus Fell MD is my real Twitter address. My fake one is Evil Dose at Garden of the Doom. Yeah. The story behind that one is unimportant. I prefer the other one, but you can choose either one you like.
Much love, Jeff. Thank you very much, everyone. Hope you guys have a great day. And I'll talk to you later, Jeff.
Thanks.